This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and throw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward. So grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Are you looking to unlock your dog's full potential and give them the best nutrition possible for peak performance? Then look no further. Anookshuk has what you're looking for. Anookshuk's nutrient-dense formulas are crafted to keep your dog's energy high and performance top-notch. Packed with premium proteins and essential fats, Anookshuk delivers the balanced nutrition your dog needs to thrive. From hunting dogs to police canines, Anookshuk is trusted by professionals. Give your dog the power of peak performance with Anookshuk Professional Dog Food. Guys, with hunting season literally right on us, and I know the guys up north, I know Maine, New York, I think Vermont, I know Wisconsin, season come in July 1st, but for us southern folks, it don't come in until August 1st, and we are in a heat wave. I mean, I'm walking outside, and I'm swimming in my own sweat. That's how hot and humid it is. So, sorry for you guys that's up north and northwest. that I'm a month late on this, but I thought this was very important. So today we've got Dr. Garrett Bailey in the house.
Easy on the doctor there.
I thought because of the heat and the humidity, and every year we deal with this in our group, that somebody's dog falls out from heat exhaustion, heat stroke. We're going to touch on some snake bites and bees, because we've got into the bees a couple times going into trees or treed with bees in them. So that's the things we're going to touch on, and we're going to let Dr. Bailey kind of give us some information, some tips, some stuff to do and not to do. So our group is lucky because we have him with us. And if he don't do what we tell him, we just hog tie him and keep him in the woods until he does it.
And I'll stay there gladly.
He don't want to go back to work either, right?
Negative, Ghost Rider.
Not in hunting season.
No.
No, I'm banking my time.
I can't wait.
I'm banking.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I cannot wait.
Well, I think we're all. But, it's too hot. I mean, we talked about it.
I know.
It's 90-some degrees today. I did not pull the humidity, which we'll get into that in a little bit.
It's up in the upper 80s
today. Upper 80s? So yeah, way too high.
It might touch 90, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, Garrett, how's everything? I'm in your house.
It's good,
table?
Man. Yeah. We're just having youngins, dogs running everywhere, trying to get something legal to drive for hunting season. A little bit different. I found out last year antique tags don't really cover you. You're just supposed to go to the garage or a car show, not be loaded down with hounds, but so, that's kind of what we've been into today.
Yeah, I pulled up in the driveway, and dogs come out of the woodwork.
They're everywhere.
They come out of the trees, from out under the porch. Two met me halfway down the driveway.
That's what Katie says. She says, someone's going to hit them. I said, look, ain't no one coming up that driveway that shouldn't be here because it is so rough. And everyone coming up here knows there are dogs and youngins running everywhere.
Well, when I turned the corner down there, I'm like, all right, blue dog, get out of the way. Get out of the way.
She'll move.
And then I pull up in the driveway, and Garrett's hanging out from underneath the Toyota. He's went sideways with the rest of the group. I am so disappointed in you, Garrett, for not going full size.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. The money.
I know. I get it. I just hope my old truck lasts me another. If it'll get me through December, then I'll work on it some more and get me through another December.
I heard that. I got the backup. I got the old Nissan in case the Yoder breaks down.
Yeah. Well, I've got another one if I need it. I just don't want to use it. I don't want to tear it up. So hopefully old Rusty will.
You dang right.
Will last me. It's going to, like me and Maddie were talking about this the other day, it's going, the truck that is going to outrun the body.
Right. The frame probably going to go. And
the bed, the fender wells and stuff are rusting so bad right now. And I just need to get some sheet metal and
get a good bed liner. They won't fall through that bed liner.
I've got one in it.
That'll save you.
Well, let me tell you about, and I didn't realize this. So when I was down North Carolina back in May, my truck was acting funny, and so on the way home, I called my garage, and I'm like, hey, this is what the truck's doing. Something's not right. I said, I swear, I think it's in the front end. And he said, all right, just bring it in when you get back. Well, I was hoping I could make it back because I was still 2 hours out from the house, and it was awful. So I get back, take it to the garage. He calls me 2 days later and said, hey, we got you fixed. You ready to go? And I said, oh, well, what was it? And he said, your shock mount had broke and your shock was jamming.
Jiminy Christmas.
Well, I didn't realize it, but there's a shield underneath my bed, like a metal plate.
Was it resting on that?
Oh, it had almost poked a hole through it.
That's what probably kept it from flying off.
Well, and that, and if I hadn't had that plate there, it would have went through the bed and probably got one of the dogs.
Jiminy Christmas.
So now I feel you. I guess all bear hunters, especially in this country, they're working on trucks basically during season.
Yeah.
It just happens.
It'll buff out's my motto until it won't.
then
if you can't hunt, well, you got to have a backup.
That's right. I know, and it's so hard. I had to borrow my buddy's. I had to drive at Yoder around last year.
I seen you in it. Oh, yeah.
That was so painful. it was painful. Knees in the dash, driving a straight.
And it wasn't a four-door either. It was extended.
No, it was the old.
The old four-door.
It didn't have a door on it. It was
extended. Right.
Yeah, extended.
Like
but you had to fold the seat up to get in the back.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, thank goodness for friends because he helped me out.
You dang right.
Yeah, that was torture. That was the last week in the early season, so.
Yeah, I remember that day. I think we walked that bear up and down the creek. Was that day? Mm-hmm. No, it was a different day.
No, I was in there. Yeah, I was in there that day. Yeah,
I think that was when you had the Toyota.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had it a couple days, so. But, Garrett, like I said, I want to talk about, you know, this time of year is awful, and I want to make sure that probably at some point in time, if you've hunted any length of time, you know, you've seen some type of heat exhaustion at least.
Right.
And I talked about this on a podcast maybe a month ago or so. I guess it was back end of June, 1st of July. We had a guy that had warrants. He bailed out and run it from his house. We pulled up. He took off running. Ended up doing a track with Pino. And, I mean, this is twice that I've seen this happen with Pino, is when that back end starts going, like, mm-hmm. boom, boom. Like, he gets a little wobbly. And he don't get so big. I've not seen him get bug-eyed yet. But
right.
That back end starts going, and he starts losing, yep. you know.
Get ataxic and weak. And
yep.
Yeah.
And yeah. I really thought I had done some damage to him because I'm not going to say I was pushing him, but he just wasn't quitting.
Right.
Like, he wasn't quitting.
Well, that's what we run into with these dogs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they ain't going to quit until they lay down. At least, hopefully, the ones we're toting around ain't going to quit until they lay. You know, it's right. just, it's in them to run to Together. Catch. And,
yeah.
And that's what we run into. But, yeah, shoot through a few things here.
Yeah,
try not to get too bogged down, but you know there's a difference in heat stroke and heat stress, and of course a fever.
Mm-hmm.
When we're dealing with heat stroke, you know, we're dealing with a marked elevation in body temperature. It's actually defined as anything over 105.8, which is why it's very important to have a thermometer
with you.
I mean, yeah, have one in the box, have two in the box. I mean, you know, have them at the house. They're very helpful with not just this, but you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing here. We got so many, Katie, she's like, I think I'll go get another. And that's 100% chance that's been a dog's hind end or a cow's hind end. But anyway, so this triggers a systemic inflammatory response and multiple organ dysfunction over time. You know, mm-hmm. once they get hot and they're hot for some time, that's kind of what we run into. And it's just because their body can't dissipate heat effectively at that temperature.
Well, let's talk about that real quick before you get into the medical terms, because you and I just had this conversation. And what people don't understand is, and if you're in a high humidity area, we looked at it and you said it was up in the high 80s today.
Right.
Temperature's 90 degrees, high 80 humidity. The dog sweats through panting. That not all, like humans, everybody knows this. Humans right. sweat. Dogs pant.
Exactly.
When the moisture in the air is of that high quality, the dog cannot release that moisture through panting.
Right.
So, i.e., that turns into the dog overheating.
Right. And that's one of the four mechanisms we'll kind of hit on yep. to dissipate heat. You know, evaporation. Yep. I mean, and that's how they're dissipating heat when they're this hot, because the other three methods just don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go over them. But the... you know, heat stress is a little bit different. You know, both of these are a result of an external source that a dog can't escape. Just heat stress is 104. We define it as 104 to 105.8.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is before a lot of times you'll see the signs that we're talking about, like with Pino. You might see a little bit of ataxia. You know, the dogs are going to fall behind and they're not going to be right, but they're not to that danger zone.
Mm-hmm.
And the thermoregulatory, you know, the hypothalamus, the set point's still the same with heat stress and a heat stroke, unlike a fever. You know, when a dog has an inflammatory response, that set point's 102.5 per se. 99 to 102.5 is normal body temperature in a dog. So the hypothalamus, that's a set point that they drive up, you know, to fight bacteria or whatever, a virus, fungal disease, whatever it might be, and even pain, you know, with pain. That set point will go up to increase the amount of inflammation where they're injured mm-hmm. or an injury. Whereas, you know, that's not the case, of course, with heat stress and a heat stroke. But some risk factors, you know, an ambient temperature over 89.5 is when, you know, some heat loss from conduction, convection, radiation, and evaporation happens. And what that is, you know, conduction, a way a dog cools is one is conduction. They lie on a cool surface, and mm-hmm. that's like, you know, you see it a lot walking from a tree. You know, the dogs are all amped up, and after you get done screaming and cussing at them and they finally wind down, you're on your way back to the truck. And if you're like me, you're a little overweight and you're panting too, and you're wanting to lay down, and while you're resting, you'll see them, they're kicking leaves out, they're mm-hmm. trying to get down to that cool soil to lay down, because mm-hmm. they transfer that into their body.
Yep.
Whereas convection is air blown over the skin that cools a dog. Radiation, and we're going to go over that a good bit because it's a big deal with this, mm-hmm. is where they vasodilate. So, you know, all of the blood flow that's generally centralized, whenever they have a heat stroke, their vessels get bigger and they move that blood flow out to the periphery. And that's how they kind of blow off a lot of heat that way, kind of through infrared heat waves. And then fourthly, and very importantly, is of course evaporation, which is done through panning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the mucous membranes and everything kind of cool the air as it comes in, goes to the respiratory tract, oxygenates the red blood cells, and then the blood goes and perfuses all of the tissues and vital organ function. So that's the four ways that we'll be talking about. And, yeah, when the air is humid, evaporative cooling doesn't happen efficiently or effectively at all. I mean, it doesn't work. So they're sitting there panting. You look in their mouth, they got that thick saliva, and it's mm-hmm. coated all over their soft palate, and you know, they just, it's not working effectively whatsoever. So the risk factor, of course, is that ambient temperature, the humidity, and then what we're doing during it, of course. I mean, we're setting ourselves up for it. But it is what it is. I mean, we can hunt these next 53 days or what, mm-hmm. fortunate for the state of Virginia. Unfortunate. But anyway, yeah. We won't go there. Water availability, of course, is very important. Some things that decrease heat dissipation is, of course, the high humidity, confinement, and poor ventilation, which is something worth hitting on with dog boxes. I mean, when you put dogs back in there, I don't care how open it is, you got four or five dogs mm-hmm. crushed in each side. You put your hand in there.
Yep.
And it's a big deal. And we'll hit on that, you know, a little bit more here in a little bit. Obesity, underweight dogs that are out of shape.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge. Mm-hmm. Prior heat strokes. I mean, once a dog strokes once, it's very likely to happen again if mm-hmm. it is a true stroke. Now, I'm not talking about heat exhaustion. I mean, right. all of our dogs have heat exhausted. Yeah. I mean, there's no way around it when we're hunting this time of year. But dogs that actually stroke out are very likely to stroke out again. So one big thing, too, is acclimation or acclimating to the temperature. And a dog does that over time, but it takes time. And we see a lot of heat strokes. Like, we'll see a lot of dogs from West Virginia that heat stroke in the spring. And it's not real hot yet, but, you know, it'll be cool in the 60s, and then you might have a day that jumps up to the high 70s. Well, them dogs haven't acclimated yet. They go run hard, you know, make a tree, go to make another tree, and then they end up stroking out. It's because mm-hmm. the acclimation process hasn't really happened yet. And it happens over a period of 60 days. They'll start to conserve more water. There'll be some salt retention. There'll be plasma expansion, and then their cardiac output will increase. And again, that happens over, you know, 60 days, which is another thing to consider. You know, how are your dogs housed? Are they, you know, out in the element? Well, you know, if they are, that's kind of good on acclimation, opposed to being inside or being in a cooler environment if they're in there all the time.
I just told my guys back our last training day. So this is the end of July, mid-July. Everybody had their windows up, air conditioning's running full blast. I pulled up in the shade and had my windows down and my air condition cut down. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, because when I take that dog from that 60-degree temperature and I put him out here in this 85-degree temperature, yes. it's harder on him than letting him sit there and work through it.
Exactly.
Like one of the first canine schools that I went to, the guy, Robinson, I can't remember his first name, Robinson, was from Tennessee. And that's what he said. He said, don't just keep, I mean, yes, when the sun's beating down and you're out in a wide open parking lot and you've got the heat coming from the pavement and the car, which mine's black.
Right.
You know, yes, absolutely. But during those training sessions, I'm very cautious, or I'm trying to help the dog so I'm not hurting him in the long run.
Right. Yeah, no, that's using your head for something other than a hat rack there.
Yeah.
I mean, because you wouldn't think, you know, you're trying to keep yourself cool in the car mm-hmm. and then, you yeah. know, no, absolutely. So there's two different types. There's an exertional and a non-exertional. You know, we see a lot of non-exertional too, just old fat bulldogs. You mm-hmm. see it a lot in Mississippi. you know, they just go outside to take a pee, and the next thing you know, they're stroked out because their brachycephalic was a smushed face and can't draw air. And but we're not going to go into that. Of course, we're dealing with exertional heat stroke with strenuous exercise. So just to try to hit on kind of the pathophysiology, real, I'll try to be pretty quick with it, but this just describes why things happen, how they happen. But, you know, when a dog can't effectively dissipate heat, it causes inflammation, coagulation, and tissue disorders. So anything over 105.8 results in nervous tissue damage. The nervous system can get damaged. Now, it has to be there for a little bit. You know, you're talking, you know, 10, 20 to 30 minutes. It's not like they're going to touch that and all of a sudden, you know, neurons are going to start dying.
Right.
And as they climb over 107, we have cellular apoptosis, which is just where the cells start lysing and dying. And over 109, that's where you start to get neuronal death. And, you know, it's irreversible and it stays over there for some time. You know, that's when you get the old brain damage or brain damage. And neurons die. And, you know, when a neuron dies, it's dead. It doesn't regenerate.
Right.
And that's the same thing with a nephron. And, you know, a nephron is the cells that make the kidney up. Hepatocytes, which make the liver up, they do regenerate. But, you know, a lot of these dogs we see do go into kidney failure, and I'll kind of hit on that. But, you know, during the thermal injury, the physiologic response is vasodilation. So the central body temperature gets so high that the dog vasodilates to move more blood flow to the periphery where they can, you know, achieve the cooling that we talked about earlier, radiation, and the infrared heat waves come off of them. So as it does that, it causes a hypovolemic state because all the blood's going to the periphery, to the extremities. Well, internally, the cardiac output increases, which keeps up with that. But then, you know, all this time they're sitting there panting ineffectively. They're just getting hotter and they're getting hotter and they're getting hotter. Well, eventually cardiac output decreases. And a normal physiologic response is vasoconstriction. And when that vasoconstriction happens, the blood flow can get to where it needs to go more effectively, i.e. the kidneys. 25% of cardiac output goes to the kidneys and the brain and everywhere else. So, but during a heat stroke, that doesn't happen. The vessels stay big. So these dogs go into hypovolemic shock. And at this point, you know, you're getting to the snowball effect of death. I mean, it's starting. So,
and what temperature is this?
This is once they've been. I mean, it can vary. Most of the time, you'll check them, and your thermometer won't even read it. I mean, they're that hot. Yeah, when they're to the point where they're flat out and they're down, I mean, I encourage everyone, get a thermometer. And even after, like, a tree, just check their temperature. You can see which dogs are going to be more tolerant to heat and which aren't.
So let's look, and maybe we're jumping ahead, but let's go over that real quick. I mean, I know we've all seen it or done it or whatever, but we're going to do it rectal. How long do we hold the thermometer in there?
So get a digital.
A digital?
Yeah. I've lost a few mercuries up some hind ends. Don't get a mercury. That's always an awkward conversation. Hey, we're going to have to get these OB forceps out and dig it out of your dog's hind end. But, you know, the digital is kind of hard. So, yeah, stick it in there. I mean, you want to get all the way up until where you can read actually what the thermometer reads rectally. And, you know, I always turn the thermometer on outside of the dog, and it's going to say 98.6, and then it's going to start flashing lines. Mm-hmm. That's when you insert it in the dog's hind end.
Yep.
Keep it in there until it beeps. Once it starts beeping, that's your temperature. And most of these dogs, if you do that, you're going to find that they're so high that it won't read. Hopefully no one has to do that. But I've always wanted to, and I never have, but it'd be nice on the days that, you know, you tree two and it's noon and you knew you shouldn't have, and you get everything back to the truck and, you know, pop a thermometer and all of them, just see where they're at. And age has a lot. The older dogs don't tolerate heat as well, that have had a lot of miles put on them either. And color, you're talking about the black car app. You know, black dogs will overheat a lot quicker. So with the hypovolemia, you know, at that point, that's something that needs to be addressed more so than we can really do in the field. And that's when you need to start thinking about, you know, calling a vet or making some plans for that. But onward with what happens. So the neurologic system, as this heats up, a lot of times they'll get over, you know, 112 to 115. And that's where a lot of times you'll see the neurologic signs. Like, you'll have a dog that'll have a seizure, or you'll have a dog that's extremely ataxic, or you look in their eyes and it's like they're on a whiskey drunk. It's like your buddy. You look in them and say, he ain't there no more. We got to get him to the house. But, you know, they're collapsed, they're stumbling, they're, what happens is the vessels, as they're vasodilated, the endothelium, which are the cells on the inside of them, are really stretched out, and they start to kind of die because they're hot, and they get edema, just fluid leaks out, and they get cerebral edema in their brain, and that's when you'll start to see a lot of the neurological signs. You know, with the GI system, and this is, I'm sure everyone that has had a dog heat stroke or heat stress has probably seen this. I mean, last year on this table here, old
Koa,
she was sloughing her whole intestinal lining here.
And, yeah.
Thinking, well, we eat on this thing, but we got towel down. but anyway, so the direct thermal injury and poor perfusion to the gut, because all of the things centrally aren't getting perfused well, again, because of the radiation, the radiative heat, you know, you'll see really bad GI ulceration. Oftentimes, they'll start vomiting blood, and they'll start just blowing nasty, bloody diarrhea. I mean, if you look at it, you can see their intestinal lining in it. And, you know, they're sloughing the lining, and this is where we can get gut-derived sepsis. So, you know, all of that barrier is gone. So, you know, our GI tract's full of bacteria, and the bacteria will translocate, you know, through the gut wall and into the vessels, and that's where they'll develop sepsis, and they'll go septic. And, you know, with the liver also, I mean, it's basically cooking. You know, it's right in the center of the body. Just cranial to the stomach, and it's very, very important in, you know, synthesizing clotting factors. And you know, with worsening heat stress and a heat stroke, that we run into coagulopathies, which we'll touch on in just a second. But before that, the kidneys. So 25% of cardiac output goes to the kidneys. You know, blood is shifting from the dog's core to the periphery, and to the kidneys, actually, sometimes they'll start bleeding because they are so underperfused and they're cooking.
So when you say 25% of the output, the cardio output, let's just put that in layman's terms. That means 25% of what the heart's pumping goes to the kidneys.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm
with you.
Yep. So you got to remember, they're dehydrated because their panting's not, they're not effectively cooling. They're also in hypovolemic shock because all their blood's going out and trying to get cooled. So their kidneys are getting hammered. And, you know, that's where we experience, see a lot of dogs go into kidney failure. You know, if we save the dog, that's great. But a lot of times you'll recheck blood work and they'll be azotemic, meaning their kidney values are up. And sometimes they won't be azotemic because 66% of renal function has to be gone before we even see clinical signs on the lab. You know, their values will be normal if they got half of their kidneys are working.
I gotcha.
So, you know,
that's interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of perfusion issues whenever a dog heat strokes, and the kidney is the one organ that we see that if dogs do make it, you know, there's a lot of lasting damage on the kidneys and cardiac as well. I mean, they'll throw cardiac arrhythmias. You put an ECG on these dogs, and I mean, it's wonky, real wonky. And, you know, we have to treat those accordingly. And the heart also is cooking. I mean, it's in the center of the body too, you know, and it's having a lot of thermal injury as well.
So it's like, I mean, it's like they're cooking inside out.
They pretty much are. That's exactly what they're doing. We're just, I'm just basically describing what that cooking's doing to them. You know, I mean, and once, you know, sepsis and systemic inflammation, that's what ends up really getting them, is they go into multiple organ dysfunction syndrome, and they go into what we call disseminated intravascular coagulation. And the increase in the body temperature, basically they have anti-inflammatory effects going, pro-inflammatory effects going, and, you know, there's a bunch of things that happen that are so in-depth, hell, I can't even remember what half of them are. But basically, you know, as this is happening, a thermal injury is going on, they can go in, a lot of them do go into to DIC, and they just start bleeding. I mean, you'll pick their gums up and they'll have what we call, you know, purpura and ecchymotic hemorrhage on their gums. They'll just be bruised, you know, and then their belly, they'll start developing bruising on their belly. And, you know, that's where, you know, oftentimes, well, all the time, I'll have a conversation with clients and say, you know, look, what's our goal here? You know, this dog is maybe going to recover. You're going to have to, you know, be willing to be all in, and it could be thousands of dollars. And realistically, this dog's running days are likely over, you know, and not always, but usually. I mean, that dog will never perform like it did before it had that heat stroke, if it's that severe, you know.
Right.
But another thing with pain management, and a lot of people do this and have NSAIDs on hand or non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like carprofen or Remedil, meloxicam, stuff like that that we use when a dog gets beat up, and we all know you'll have extra and you have it laying around. It's contraindicated to give a dog non-steroidal anti-inflammatories that is experiencing even heat stress or heat stroke because the liver metabolizes NSAIDs or like carprofen, Remedil, you know, and the kidney excretes it. So if the kidney's getting hit and you're giving NSAIDs and causing the, you know, the kidneys are, you can cause a lot
more damage
to
so
the
you're
kidney.
Saying do not.
Do not, absolutely.
Okay. Make sure I thought that's what you right. used some big word, Garrett, that I didn't understand.
Well, I didn't either. I just said it. But that's certainly a big no-no. You know, we use opioids, which, you know, are, of course, a controlled drug when they come in because they are super painful.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, and that's kind of the nuts and bolts of a lot of the pathophysiology on what happens. There's certainly a lot that's left out. But, you know, and now I think would be a good time to talk about, like, cooling the patient. So, you know, you get to the tree or you have a dog that didn't make the tree and you go find it and that some buck is laid out down. And and in rough shape. So everyone wants to go to the creek. Go to the creek and dunk him and just leave him there.
I'm guilty.
And the thing that I always tell, you know, other veterinarians is because they've never been in that situation. It's like, you know, we're in the woods. Mm-hmm. We don't have access to all the things that you think we should. We have, we don't have it. So, but, you know, whenever you dunk a dog and you leave them in the creek, they can't dissipate that heat, you know, that we were talking about with radiation. I mean, and they're
going to a sauna.
And you're keeping the heat in. Mm-hmm. You know, you're actually making it worse.
So let's back up a second, because I've had this happen to two of my dogs in the past. When I get in there and I realize that this dog is having heat issues,
right,
and I don't know if it's exhaustion or stroke or whatever.
Right.
Is it best for me to try to carry that dog out, or like one dog I carried for a while, but she was bigger. You know, she was a bigger female and I was a mile and a half in.
Yeah.
I had three other dogs with me. So I carried her, I'd make her walk. And literally she was down for a year before I got her back right. And you were exactly right. The heat, she never did right in the heat again.
Right.
But anyway, so do I need to think about, and a lot of these upland websites have like a sling that you could put in your bag. It's small. Right. It rolls up. I mean, it's smaller than if you rolled your sock up. Is that something that I should be looking at, or what should I do with that dog?
So if it's a heat stroke, you won't have a choice because the dog, you're going to have to carry it or drag it, you know. Because it's going to lay there. But with heat exhaustion, I'll look on the Garmin and see, you know, where is the closest water? Because if I got a mile and a half to the truck dragging six dogs, you know, and water's 200 yards, I'd be tethering dogs to trees and taking that dog to water. And when you go to water, you know, you want to work the water into the dog's coat and its fur. You know, you can cup water. It's actually they cold water causes vasoconstriction, right? Mm-hmm. And which that is
it contradicts what you want to do.
So if you read a textbook, you're supposed to use room temperature water or hot water. Well, that's real practical out there in the bush, you know. So the best thing to do is kind of cup water out and just cover the dog, you know, rubber belly, rubber feet, rubber legs, rubber back, and just get them wet, because that's going to help dissipate that heat. And then, you know, as you're walking out and air's blowing over, it's going to cool the dog. And that's really all that you can do in that situation.
And that's heat exhaustion, not heat stroke.
Well, and even with a heat stroke, it's all you can do, you know. But with heat exhaustion, it's good to do as well. Mm-hmm.
But I thought we were supposed to stay away from water because we were making it worse.
Well, so you're not wanting to dunk them and leave them in the water.
Yeah, just make sure we clarify that.
Yeah, getting water is good. Letting them drink is good. Water availability is super important, you know, especially once you get back to the truck. These dogs that are exhausted, they got to have water, you know. But with a dog that's heat stroked or heat exhaustion, water is good to put on them. But you just don't want to submerge them in water.
Okay.
You want to wet them and work the water in. And then what we do at the clinic is we put fans on them. And I had mentioned alcohol when we did that. That's baloney.
Oh, yeah. So that's changed.
That's changed. And that's the thing about veterinary medicine, man. It changes. I mean, we might have something new next year right before training season that we find out. But the alcohol theory that causes vasodilation has actually been disproven and has said that it can maybe be worse for them because they might take some of that alcohol up in their bloodstream.
So, that's
no longer recommended.
But, so
you want to get them wet, and then you just got to get them out of the woods. And at that point, you know, they need to be in the truck. You need to have the AC full blown. If the old truck ain't got no AC, I'd put her up on a rig rack, and I'd make time, you know, and get to the vet, especially if it's a valuable dog. And, you know, with the heat exhaustion, and you should know this because hopefully you have a thermometer. If you get back to the truck and they're 106, 105, 106, they're still getting around, you know, get them water, you wet them down, cool put them off. Up on a rig, cool them off, put them in the truck, and then recheck their temperature in, you know, 30 minutes. So get them on the rig and get them going and get them cool. And then recheck their temperature in, you know, 15 to 20 minutes or whether they're in the vehicle or what. And there's a few things not to do that a lot of people want to do. You know, don't ever soak a towel and put it over the dog, which, you know, you think you're doing good because the towel is cold, but you're actually not because, I mean, it's holding heat in and heat
can't dissipate.
It's
like a thermal blanket.
It really is.
Yeah.
But it's crazy how many dogs will come in that have been covered up in a towel.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's just, yeah, it's essentially a blanket. But yeah, so the checking and rechecking the temperature is extremely important, even in heat exhaustion dogs, because these dogs will be cooling down and they're going to reach 103. And that's kind of the number that you quit trying to cool a dog off because their hypothalamus gets jacked up during this time anyway. I mean, their brain was cooking at one point, you know, so they'll actually get hypothermic. You know, you'll recheck their temperature, and the next thing you know, it's too low for the thermometer to read. And that causes you're starting to get to the point where you're peeing up a rope when that happens. So even in the clinic, a lot of times lavage these dogs, I'll stick a hose up their hind end, and I will give them just room water temp enemas and just roll her. But you got to watch, I mean, because you know, you can get them too cold too quick, and then that's a whole other bag of worms. So 103 is kind of the cutoff that you want to quit doing what you're doing and, you know, reassess the dog. How is he doing now? You know, if the dog started having seizures, another good thing to keep in your box is K-Ro syrup. I mean, these dogs will get hypoglycemic.
Yep.
I mean, their blood glucose will drop. So, you know, if you're on the way to the vet and the dog is neurologic and you're looking in his eyes and he ain't looking back, no one's home, he's had a seizure, or, you know, they're stumbling around, rub K-Ro syrup on their gums. Do not pour it down their throat. Just soak your finger in it, and they'll absorb it through their mucous membranes. Another good thing that, and this hasn't been proven yet, but I had a sport dog client. She's actually a veterinarian as well. I tried to call her to find out some information on this, but they were doing a study where they actually open their mouth and have like a ketchup bottle with water, and they spray off their soft palate, because if you ever look, their soft palate's so gooped with thick saliva.
Mucus, yeah.
They're saying that might really aid in helping them cool as they're panting. But I wouldn't recommend doing that because I don't know if it works, you know. And, you know, you don't want to waterboard them, obviously. You get an aspiration pneumonia.
Yeah.
We're going to get him cooled off, but damn, he's got pneumonia.
Yeah.
But, and then once these dogs recover, even the heat exhaustion dogs, it's very important for them to get some groceries in them because, you know, as the GI system, even if it got a little insult, he might not be sloughing his lining, but he's probably going to blow diarrhea, and he might even blow diarrhea for a day or two.
Yep.
You know, get some wet food, boil some chicken, some white rice. Don't be making no bacon or anything like that, but, you know, get them something bland that's easy on their belly and get them eating. That really helps a dog out a lot when this happens, is getting them back on feed quick.
So I've got a couple questions for you. And I've been told this, you know, probably throughout my hunting career. So, just making sure it's still a go or no go. Like I carry Gatorade with me in my car for Pino, cause it's got the electrolytes and it's got some sugar in it.
Right.
I will mix that with his water, sometimes. And of course, you know that Dogs Archery, they have the glycerol that's already pre-mixed.
Yeah.
Hydrate 101, and it's, they already have it. It's a great product. I used it last year, and I didn't see some of the problems that the other guys had.
Right.
But again, y'all were running a little bit harder than I was, too. Like, I wasn't dumping it.
Well,
12 o'clock in the daytime, smart. Garrett.
Man, when they cross the road, I mean, what are you going to do? You got to dump a box.
I got mine padlocked at 10 o'clock.
I got so many dogs around here, my guy. I got to run them.
So,
no, but that's the way to be. That's what I preach. But, man, sometimes
it's
I
hard.
Struggle.
Yeah. So I have Gatorade. Of course, I use the glycerol. I used it last year in my water before every run.
That's a great idea.
Up till mid-September, and I think I slacked off. A lot of us have significant others, wives, girlfriends, whatever, that are nurses.
Right.
I've got, and you know, I got this from you, but I carry a couple of drip bags with me now.
Right.
Of course, you know, I've got you with me 90% of the time,
right.
Or somebody that's in the nursing field that can pop that in between shoulder blades and roll with it.
And that's something that, you know, in a heat exhausted animal, it's sub-Q fluids are never going to hurt. But in a true heat stroke dog, you're peeing up a rope, you know, with all the things that we just kind of went over, they need an IV catheter and shock doses of fluids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what they got to have if they're going to make it. But, I mean, you don't want to set on those. I've had clients that have done, I've seen a lot of good dogs die that, they, you know, they'll heat stroke at 10 and they don't want to call. This is back before I was working emergency medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want to call, or, you know, they think the dog's going to be all right. And then, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning when he's still laterally recumbent and, you know, his intestines are falling out of his hind end and, you know, he's looking comatose, you know, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that point, you know, we're done. I've had a lot of them die on the way in, you mm-hmm. know. It's like windy heat stroke.
But that goes back to the having a thermometer. Like
that's
guys, that's a $2.99 fix.
Yep, right there.
Like,
I mean, it's
there's no excuse for us not having a couple of those laying around in everybody's vehicle.
Absolutely. And it's they're so handy too, you know, just in being a dog man and dealing with your dogs when they're mm-hmm. off, they're sick, they're not eating, check their temperature. I mean, mm-hmm. there's so much. I have a buddy, and you know, when he gets a dog tore up, and you know, it's not bad, but it may be, you know, he's debating on taking it or calling about getting it sewed up or something. He'll check their temperature, and if they marinate overnight, that's the first thing he does in the morning, because again, that set point with inflammation changes, like we were talking about, you know, the difference in a fever.
Mm-hmm.
A dog that gets tore up pretty bad, they'll develop a fever.
Correct.
And he'll check, you know, he'll check that next morning. If it jumped a degree, but he'll be coming, you know. And there's a lot of value in taking a dog's temperature.
Yeah.
A lot of value.
So let's talk about the box. I don't remember where I was at, but this has been probably a good 15 years ago or so. Oh, we were up north hunting, midsummer, July.
Right.
Hot. And in New York, you can't turn loose after it's 80 degrees.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you cannot. But we had a hard run, caught the dogs up, and one of my buddies was with me, and we were in two separate vehicles, and we stopped at the gas station. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm getting a couple bags of ice." I said, "Bags of ice?" He said, "Yeah, I'm going to throw it up in the dog box." So he literally got two bags of ice, left them full, busted them, threw them up, just the bag and all.
Right.
Laid it up in there, and man, them dogs was like laying right against it,
yeah,
cooling.
Right, right.
And I've done it since
right.
I seen him do that. Of course, like I said, that was 15 years ago. So,
What
are some, like, my box is not as open as you guys. Mine's got the slides on it, and that's
right.
it. It don't have rig holes or whatever.
Right.
But at the same sense, I never have more than six dogs in my box.
That's a big thing there. I mean,
yeah.
you know, and. And putting them on the rig when they get mm-hmm. like that is, because, I mean, you're achieving, you know, the airflow and convection cooling
mm-hmm.
Is happening, you know, as you're driving down the road and they're on the rig. I mean, they're going to cool off a
yep.
lot more effectively. And then conduction, dissipating heat, talking about lying on a cool surface, that's exactly what them dogs are trying to do when you throw the ice in the box,
mm-hmm.
you know. But you have to be careful. I mean, if they're just exhausted, that's fine. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, but if they're truly heat stroking, that's a whole different deal. But yeah, I mean, that's a great idea with ice. And just having an open box, I think, helps. But, I mean, I got five holes in each side of my box. And then the box I had last year had three, and it got decent ventilation, but it's crazy when you stick your hand in there. You're like, gee, many Christmas.
It's a 10 or 15 degree difference.
Yeah, easy.
Yes.
And easy. And like you say, you know, when you got five or six dogs in each side, I mean, they're cooking. Yep. And the other thing I think we hit on a little bit, but, you know, having a water box on the truck, and when you get back to the truck, even after the first race, you know, if you tree one early and you're going to want to go try to find another one, water all the dogs. Yep. And, you know, that's extremely important.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about out of shape. Because you and I talked about it before we walked in here. You know, you was asking when I was going to hunt. And I'm like, I mean, my main goal for the next week, maybe 2 weeks, is to get my dogs out when it's cool, whether that be early morning or evening.
Right.
And just exercise them. I have no expectation of catching a bear. Now, like you said, one runs across the road and I can pack it up and it's not 100 degrees. Absolutely. I need to acclimate my dogs.
Yeah. And that I've been trying with my young dogs that, you know, I can road effectively around here. You know, I've been roading them. But there's a big difference in roading a dog and getting them in. You know, that's a whole different deal when they're chasing a bear opposed to just roading and exercising. Now, don't get me wrong. It's certainly better than not.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, and these young dogs are a lot more tolerable, but you can make an old dog out of a young dog quick. I mean, I see a lot of these boys in West Virginia. I mean, they run, you know, they catch a lot of bear and run all the time. You know, at 6 years old, that dog's old. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to have a 10-year-old dog.
Yeah,
I mean, because they're either going to move it on when he's six because he's slowing down and he's not contributing, or he's going to die.
Yeah,
you know, because of just the wear and the tear.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is getting them in shape, running them, and then feeding to condition. Man, that's a huge one. I always get people, well, how much do you feed? Well, I mean, every dog's different.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a body condition score chart that, you know, it's 1 through 9, and 1 to 3 is underweight, and 4 to 6 is what we consider ideal, and 7 to 9 is obese. And, you know, I got some dogs that eat twice what other dogs eat because they run the chain. They're idiots, you know, but, you know, they run hard and they do what they need to do to keep, you know, sticking around. Mm-hmm. But you got to feed that dog different than that dog that has a little bit more sense and lays around in the box and he's not, you know, and then all their metabolisms are different. So feeding to condition and having a dog, you know, fit is very important as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, really, really important.
Yeah, I cut. So Pino, about mid-May, towards the end of May, I cut his food back, and he looks really good right now. You can almost count the last three ribs, like almost. You can see two. It depends on how he's standing or turning. You can maybe see the third one.
Yeah.
And all my gain, they're like, man, you got that. I'm like, it's summertime.
Yeah.
Any extra weight is putting extra burden on him.
Absolutely.
Like y'all guys. I mean, they got these GSPs, and I'm like,
fatter than mug.
Yeah, they need to go on a diet.
Yeah,
like come on, like you can't operate in the heat like that. But I also understand that if my dog's overweight and I try to cut his food the week before season, and then I put that burden shock on him for running him, I'm just making it worse too.
I assess them every time I feed them. You know, when I feed, as you see, all my dogs are on chains for the most part and rock or dirt. And I mean, I pick them their feces every day and I look at them.
Yep.
And, you know, if they're starting to see a little bit of the top of their hips, or they're getting a little ribby, or maybe they're getting a little too fat. And I put my hands on them too. I mean, I feel what kind of fat cover they got. I mean, I got one crossed up dog out there. I mean, if they all ate like that, I'd cut my feed bill in half. I mean, I feed her half of what I do everyone, and she stays fat.
Right.
You know, she stays in good condition. So every dog's different.
That's right.
And feeding to condition is important. I like to see them going in like this time of year at about a 4 to a 5, a 6 I think is too fat. I mean, but now 6 is normal. You know, it's a normal 4 to 6 is normal. But you know, I like to see the last couple ribs but yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about bees real quick.
Yeah.
So I've been in. I mean, this happened to me a couple of years ago. Went into the tree. The dogs were off the tree, and I couldn't understand why. I'm like, well, they're going. They're barking. Like,
right.
Well, I go in, and I mean, I'm literally standing right beside. I'm standing in a yellow jacket's nest. They start eating me up. the dogs had several stings on them.
Right.
Is there something I can do? Is there something that I should do to maybe curve that?
Yeah, I mean, diphenhydramine, Benadryl.
Benadryl.
I mean, that is it. You know, it's an antihistamine. There's a huge histamine response when a dog gets stung by bees. Mm-hmm. You know, I see them all the time at the emergency clinic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll come in and their muzzle's swollen. Well, we don't know what happened, but, you know, was it a bee or was it a snake? Well, leave him here overnight and I'll watch it. And then I just slug him with Benadryl. I mean, I give it under the skin, you know, give it a shot of Benadryl, but a pill works just fine. And it's a milligram per pound.
Oh, and I was going to ask. Yeah. That was my next question.
Milligram
how
per
much?
Pound. So, you know, a 50-pound dog gets 50 milligrams, which it comes in 25-milligram tablets. So that's two tablets. And you can do it as often as every 8 hours.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, generally, it's very, very rare to see a dog come in that's been stung by bees that needs much more than that.
Right.
You know, if there's a fair amount of swelling around the airway, then, you know, we might reach for some other things. But, you know, usually there's not. Their muzzle will swell up. And even around the airway, sometimes if I know it was a bee, I'll just do the Benadryl and I'll kind of keep the dog overnight and just monitor it. I actually had one two nights ago. You know, had a bunch of swelling down mm-hmm. around its throat latch there, under its chin. And, you know, the guy was kind of worried about it being a snake and he didn't have money for anti-venin. And, you know, so we kept the dog, and after Benadryl within 3 hours, you know, it looked a lot better.
So let's talk about the snake bite real quick. So we know, Bryce done a podcast. You guys, if you hadn't listened to it, Deep and Lonely with Dr. Bronx, and he has some really good information on there. And Benadryl was one of the things he talked about
right.
with the snake bite. So is there any other thing we should do? And I know you'll talk about the anti-venom, but...
Yeah, I mean, the thing, you know, what we should do and what we shouldn't do, I haven't got to listen to that podcast yet, and I plan on it. But, yeah, I mean, anti-venom is kind of the treatment. You know, if you the AVMA, that's what they recommend, and it works. I mean, but, you know, a vial, $650, and you know, you got to have an IV catheter, they got to have IV fluids, they're hospitalized. I mean, I've had dogs that have taken three vials before. And you know, the truth of the matter, you know, if a dog gets bit by a copperhead in the leg or something like that, it really depends on how much venom they get. A lot of those dogs, that whole leg will blow up. It'll get very swollen. And, you know, I'll have people that say, hey, and I mean, I'm one of them. You know, if that's a young dog and he got bit and he's not doing a whole lot, well, I mean, I'm not about to spend $1,200 to give him anti-venin. I mean, I'm just, you know, we got three kids running around here and student loans and bills like everyone else. But, you know, steroids and antibiotics actually by the AVMA now are contraindicated. Now, you know, it's not a perfect world. I'm not going to sit here and say that I've never give steroids to a snake bite, because I'm not a liar and I'd be lying. But, you know, as far as recommendations, you know, Benadryl is a big one. A milligram per pound every 8 hours. And then I would recommend just reaching out to your local vet. You know, if it's more than that, antivenin's not an option, and getting some advice or taking the dog in to be seen.
Right. Well, is there anything else that you think we would run into during the early season right now when it's hot, foliage is out, all the creatures are out messing around? Is there anything that you think we've skipped over?
You know, not necessarily. I think that's kind of the three big ones. I mean, you know, other things we can hit, you know, any time of year with just injuries and but I think those are kind of the three big ones that we're going to see this time of year, at least that is in my head right now.
So let's recap that, and then I'm going to ask you a question, we're going to wrap it up.
All right.
So thermometer. Guys, there's no sense in not having a digital thermometer.
I have a few of them.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm going to when I get to work tomorrow, I'm going to go buy me another one. And I have the old one, so I'm going to upgrade.
I'm telling you, I literally lost one up a dog's hind end one time.
Yeah, no.
I turned around to write in a chart. I was in high school and turned back around, and it was gone. I mean, the thermometer was, we had to go fishing.
Yeah. one of the things that I learned from you last year, which I've invested in, is a good set of clippers.
Right.
So I'm doing that.
Yeah, no, that's extremely important. Yep. I mean, golly, I can't beat that up enough. No. I mean, when people bring a dog in that got tore up two or three days ago because he's not doing good now. You know, and the hair is literally matted on the wound and it can't drain, you know, you've got to buy a pair of clippers. I mean, it's extremely important to get everything clean, get it flushed out, you know, and to assess the wound. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had holes that end up, you know, going into a body cavity, but no one ever really looked at it, you know, and it comes in a couple of days later. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, he's herniated. You know, we gotta, has to go to surgery. So,
and K-Row syrup.
Yep.
Man, you can get that at the DG.
Yep.
And again, $1.99, hook you right up. So for $10, not excluding the clippers, but for $10, you can have what you need to make a good assessment and get the dog to help, i.e. the vet, or decide that my dog's not there, so I don't need to rush it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
So Garrett, I'm going to wrap this up. Tell me your favorite hunt last year.
Oh,
what was your favorite one?
I had a lot of them, but it was probably that bear I killed in the hole.
In the hole. And we went back 2 weeks later and caught another one in the hole, brought your shell casings to you.
Freaking awesome. Oh, my gosh. I walked in ahead of a holler, and the only dog I had that was reliable at the time and still kind of the only one, started opening, and some of my young dogs took off, and, I mean, they were scalding earth and kind of left her. And, you know, I thought they were trashing, and they ended up kind of pulling over into a big old holler and catching on the creek and walked for about 30 minutes and ended up treeing.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon Thompson, old Glade Creek Kennels, he was with us that day, and he ended up packing some dogs in, and then old Hot Rod, old Sambo come, and he packed some dogs in. The bear come out, and it tore a few dogs up and ended up getting in a hole, and I was going up there, and I mean, I'd done decided he was dying. I mean, Brandon had seen him and had seen he was a good bear.
Mm-hmm.
And we got in there, and I was walking up through there. I mean, I was tore up like a can of sauerkraut. And Brandon said, Garrett, you dropped your magazine. And I turned around. I had one bullet in my pistol, and the whole 15-round mag was sitting there on the ground. So I got that, and I'm glad I did. And, man.
We are duct taping and Velcroing your stuff to you this year.
I'm telling you, man, it would have been rough if I would have had one round, because we'd have been turning back on him. I mean, we got in there, and Wormy, Sam's Mac dog, a couple of the young dogs out of Spook, and they were in the hole. And, you know, he was in there luckily he wasn't a mean bear. I mean, he was terrible, you know, he wasn't mean, but, I mean, he tore some dogs up, but, we got, you know, Wormy don't have a tail, and he was the last dog I pulled out, and, finally got him out, and his jaw was kind of hanging off where he had locked jaws with the bear, and, the bear come out, and I was feeding them to him, but, I got 15 rounds for a reason. I can't shoot a pistol worth a hoot.
And they said, oh, Hot Rod said, got a little Western up in there. And I was like, was Wesley there or was it Garrett?
It got real Western. And he ended up deciding it was a better idea to back out of the hole, and that's where he messed up. He got in behind them ribs and let her purr, and we killed him. You know, he died right there. About 250. I mean, it was a good bear. Pretty boar bear.
Yeah.
And, man, it was a good time. Yeah. I'm ready to make a lot more memories like that. I don't really care to kill them, but, you know, a situation like that, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like killing, but but that's not what it's about for me, you know. It's about the dog, so.
Well, I killed one last 2 years, and I have no desire to kill one. I still don't even know why I pulled a trigger.
That situation, I don't know how you wouldn't have.
Well, I mean, I didn't have nowhere to go, that's for sure. It was going to have to be me or him.
I can guarantee you he'd have died if I'd have been there.
I'll tell you one on Garrett. Like, I don't remember which hunt it was. Oh, yeah, Jeff Shetler was in, and his wife and daughter were with us. And we had treed a bear, and anyway, we're hauling ready. Garrett was up in the holler way above us, and we were trying to tell him where we were at. Well, Garrett's dogs kind of filtered in. We tied him up, and we had already taken the bear, got it back to the truck, and here comes Garrett. I mean, literally popping out of the brush, like it's like Moses parting the water. The laurel thicket opened up, here come Garrett, and he don't have a radio. He don't have his Garmin. He's lost his phone.
The bear's dead.
He don't have a hat. And I'm like, Garrett. And he's like, I lost everything coming down through there. And that's why we kind of poke fun at him, tell him we're going to Velcro and duct tape him and tether everything he's got this year.
Everything but my soul, my boots that day. I mean, it was gone. I luckily found the Garmin, but it took a while. The radio's still down in that holler somewhere.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I used that radio.
So that's why I got mine tethered.
Hey, I got a new – I had a dang bino case that I was using, which was stupid. And I got to crawling through, you know, the laurel. And everything come undone several times. So I got a new setup this year. I mean, I'm still going to lose a lot, but hopefully it won't be as much.
Don't use the Sitka binocular pack.
Do not.
Because you it will not hold your equipment.
Simply fact, not fiction. And if anyone wants one, I got one for sale. I mean, I'd even give it to you.
Yeah. To upgrade, right?
I done upgraded, but I still got that thing, and I do not need nothing to hold no binos. Not here in good old Appalachia.
Oh, Garrett, well, I appreciate it. Like I said, I'm glad. Hopefully this helps people out, helps people if they do get in that shape to make some really quick decisions and get the dog where they need it, when they need it there. Like I said, over the several years, I've had a couple dogs, and you and I just had this conversation about my old Jack dog. I honestly think that played a part in what happened to him. I really do.
There's cumulative damage happens from heat stress. I mean, it really does.
And it can show up 6 months later.
Absolutely.
Well, it was 4 months later for him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, 100%. So. 100%.
Well, I appreciate your time, and thank you.
Yeah, man.
And we're going to get after him next week.
Simply fact, not fiction.
That's right.
Tailgate drops before the light. Cooler's packed and the rig's sitting right. Tracking collars charged, beeping green. Boots in the bed and the rifle's clean. Dog box rattling, engines hum. We're chasing bear till the day is done. Old Rang barking like he knows what's near. Nose to the wind, tail full of cheer. From the Virginia mountains to the Carolina clay, burning fuel and miles each day. Every turn's another tale. Through mountain mist and paper trails, we see the sunset red in Tennessee. Rise through the fog in old WV. North Carolina's pines echo loud with the cry of a hard run. Chasing bear. Rest stops few, the roads are long, but the fire in our hearts still burns strong. Wisconsin mornings cutting crisp and clear. Canada's wildwoods drawing near. Still got states we ain't run, but that hound dog fever won't let us quit. We see the sun. Chasing bear. Gas station coffee, Alpha XL on the dash. Another back road, another bear track. Friends made fast and stories told slow. Under stars where only hunters go. We see the sunrise gold in Canadian air. And it sets on a trail down in Appalachia. Packing steel and leather, grit and care. We're built for the road and chasing bear. So load the dogs and slam the gate. There's a trail ahead, we won't be late. From dawn to
dusk, we're always there, chasing daylight, chasing them bears.
Saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it three times on the way back to the hotel, because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.